Grade 4 Conference, Lecture 27, Norse Mythology, Part 5. We will now look at the nature of the groupings of the Norse gods in the light of the evolutionary picture that I've given you in the last two lectures. We're going to meet two very important groups of gods at the outset, the Vanir and the Æsir, also called Æsir, and other also called other things by those who know Icelandic, but I'll generally be calling them the Æsir or Æsir, which vowel I choose, I can't always predict. So the Vanir, we learn, are gods who are very involved with great phenomena on the face of the earth, storms and geological phenomena occurring and the coursing of rivers and things like that. This gives them way immediately, gives them away as being imbued with the forces of spirits of form. So they carry the forces that Yahweh would have had. And we know how powerfully Yahweh could work on making waters part and making smoke and lightning and thunder erupt from mountains and things like that. That's what the Vanir could do. However, they did not choose to fully evolve into spirits of form. They remained on the level of Arkai so that they could stay closer to the earth. Once you evolve to be a spirit of form, your relationship to the earth occurs over very, very long periods of time. And it is not a very intimate connection, but one that has a great deal to do with maintaining the physical structure of the earth. So that's the work of the Vanir. They then have a great battle for ascendancy and primacy with the Æsir. And the Æsir, we learn, do not have the capacity to simply make the earth move and change that the Vanir have, but they are able to fight very well. They have weapons. They are good at strategizing and building things which give them a degree of safety. So even when they're meeting a formidable enemy like the Vanir, they can hold their own, which is exactly what happens. So these two groups of gods finally have to sign a treaty or make a treaty. I don't think they were writing yet. And they agree then to just go their own ways. One of the Vanir stays with the Æsir as a hostage in a way, or a goodwill sign, and another one of the Æsir goes to the Vanir. And the Æsir are not beings with the power of spirits of form, but rather they have the capacity of Æsir. They are able of, of Arkai. They are able to create and organize things that will lend a fastness to the earth. They're able to build structures such as the great castle of Valhalla, which we'll see plays an important role, and such as the wall around Asgard, which is their home. And this wall made of stones is something that the gods themselves, the Æsir themselves, can't just pick these rocks up and put them where they want. The Vanir could, but not the Æsir. So the Æsir should be going on to the rank of Arkai, but instead they remain in the form of archangels. And very powerful, very advanced, highly developed beings, but not as far evolved as the Vanir are. And this is something that we will see again and again in the mythologies of the succeeding people that are studied in grade 5, that the older gods who actually belong to a higher hierarchy are overcome by the younger gods. Now, how can this happen? How can gods who are less evolved, less developed, overcome the old gods? What we're being told here are two things. Number one, older and younger, the relationship of sons, the sons of these gods, the daughters of these gods, those family rankings mean that you are one hierarchy higher or lower than the succeeding. If you are the father of a group of gods, you are one stage above them in your consciousness, in your development. If you are the son or daughter of a god or goddess, you are one stage below. When we say that the younger gods, the children of those gods, overcame their parents or the older gods, what it means is that they were given the rulership or responsibility for the earth or for part of the earth, whereas the older gods withdrew into a higher realm. Their task now spread out into a much more cosmic realm. So it doesn't mean that they lost in the sense that they then, you know, held their heads in shame. It simply means that their tasks, their development, their consciousness was now going in a very different direction. And gods and goddesses who were more closely in tune with human beings now took their place. And this is part of this evolutionary picture that Steiner gives us. He says that we are human beings right now. We will not always be human beings. We will be angels. The angels in old moon evolution, they were human beings, not like us of flesh and blood, because the moon was not nearly as densified as the earth is now, but rather in the sense that they were going through their human stage. Further back than that, the archangels went through a human phase, then through an angelic phase, and now they are in their archangelic phase, the archai as well, way back in old Saturn at the very beginning of Earth evolution. That was when they went through their human phase. So this is why these three branches of the third hierarchy have such a sympathetic relationship to humanity, because they went through the same thing we are going through now. Steiner's characterization of what it means to be human is that one has four bodies, starting with a physical body, an etheric, an astral, an ego. That's what it means to be a human. All of these beings went through this fourfoldness with a physical body at the base, but their physical bodies were very differently constituted from the physical body we have. Ours is much more dense, much more recalcitrant. So this is why we need the help of beings who were willing to step more closely towards matter. You know, they say fools rush in where angels fear to tread. These beings do not fear to tread. They are willing to go as far as they can to nearly touch base with matter, with earthly matter. And for this, we have to be very, very grateful. And this is another reason that your children will feel such a kinship, such a sympathy for, such a friendship with these beings. Because unless you tell the myths really, really badly, and yes, I've seen it done, but it's really hard. It's really hard to completely mess up Norse mythology, because these gods and goddesses shine through. You sense the kind of sacrifice that they made for a long, long time into the future. They're going to be behind now all of their companions, all of their peers. They're never quite going to catch up for a long time to come. That's the degree of sacrifice that they have made. But for this, we have to really express gratitude, or at least try to let that gratitude shine through the stories that we tell. Of the beings who have the power of Archai in the bodies of archangels, the two most important in our stories are Odin, the leader or king of the gods, and his wife Frigg. And these two are both beings who are far more powerful than the other gods and who are naturally seen as their leaders because they are more highly evolved. They carry within themselves the capacity to be beings of time who work in the course of time. It will not surprise us when we see the relationship to time that Odin in particular has, and it will not surprise us to see Frigg's connection to the very structure of society. How can people live and work together? What rules, what customs, what traditions are needed? Also something that arises in the course of time. So here we have, there are others as well, but the two most important, Odin and Frigg, two archangels with the power of Archai within. Archangels who have sacrificed their own forward development for the time being. They have children, and among their children, the most prominent is Thor. What is Thor? Thor is an angelic being with the power of an archangel living within him. That means that Thor is able to come quite close to human beings and will even take on a lot of their characteristics. But when we get angry, we may utter a bad word or, you know, slap something, hopefully not a child in our class. When Thor gets angry, we can feel the archangelic power that's streaming through him. And that's when we get the lightning and the thunder and the incredible power. You know, if we think of Archangel Michael, how is he portrayed? With a sword, with a spear, wearing armor. I know today he's meant to only, you know, take the dragon through rehab. But in the old days, he actually used to kill the dragon. And Thor is more the old school of such things. He's not generally into trying to help giants with their social issues and things like that. So here we have, among others, we also have Heimdall, who guards the Rainbow Bridge. We have Iduna, who guards the golden apples of the gods that keep them young and so on. So these are beings who are relatively close to human beings, but carry within themselves capacities for forming great groups. And this is why all of these gods have their particular followers and their sort of fan clubs in a way, because they have the archangelic ability to form human beings in groupings. And we might say, though we don't see it in these stories, we hear about it much more in the fifth grade mythologies, that they are also all teachers of humanity, that they're teaching human beings how to do things. We don't see that so much in the Norse myths because, as I said, they are theogonies. They're really mostly about the interplay of the gods with one another. But that certainly was there. That was another reason that they were allowed to remain back, so that they could share with human beings some of the secrets of the more highly evolved angels, archangels, and Archai, even though they were aware that was taking a risk, that these forces, these capacities, could easily be abused. I'll have a little bit more to bring about the gods, goddesses, and their hierarchical identity. And then we're going to start to look into the structure of the world of the Norse myths. And little by little, we'll get to hear some of the stories of the gods and their adventures.